Okay, it's happening. Welcome to the Whole Home Podcast. I'm Laura Letario. Thank you so very much for tuning in after such a long hiatus. I shared about that on a little 6-minute blip a few weeks back, so I won't get into it again, but I am so glad and so grateful you are here to join me and to join my lovely guest. The guest across from me tonight was actually not on my original lineup for season 2, but a conversation this summer changed that. We shared a conversation about friendship, which is something I have been thinking about all summer, specifically, what kind of relationships should I be pursuing with women in the church? Anyway, that's a topic for another day, but after listening to Autumn, I just gave your name away, share her experience, her experience of friendship so candidly, I just knew I had to have her on Whole Home. So it's actually because of you, Autumn, that I am being a crazy lady and doing this podcast right before I have a baby girl. So you might as well say hi now.
Hi.
Since I've let you out of the bag and make yourself known. But I thought maybe just because of the age you are, maybe you'll get engaged or I don't know, something like that. Just do something wild and I don't know, move out or something. I just really wanted to capture your story while you're still in your parents' home because just thought you're in a pivotal juncture in your life. So I had to get to you now. And then after Evelyn's born, who knows what I'm doing? I don't even know. So now or never. Okay, so I've said your name, that you are lovely women, and I'll let you introduce yourself now.
Okay. Well, I'm Autumn Lachlan, and hello. Yeah.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Okay. I think before we dig in, we should share how we met, and then I want to say a few things about you, if I may. So we have reconnected. We were acquaintances, and I honestly can't remember when, like a decade ago?
Yeah.
Was it 15 years ago? Was it?
Probably. I think it was when we first went to Remnant because we were here when it was started.
Yeah.
And because I asked my parents about this, I was like,
it would be 15 then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was when it started. So I was like a toddler.
Yes. So you're a blood relative to Pastor Brian. And then is there anything else you want to share about just your background there?
I don't know.
Okay. And now our families have been getting to know each other. Ryan got left at church. We had one car and your dad was there and they were the only person,
really?
People in the building or something. I don't know, something where there was a car situation and they were trapped for hours together. Not trapped, obviously, they could leave. And it was like from the Lord. It was like a thing Ryan was annoyed about happening because he just wanted to come home, but it didn't work out. Right. But it was like, praise the Lord. And then that was a little over a year ago, I guess.
Okay. I was like the first time, because I probably met Ava before I officially met you guys.
Okay.
The first time I really remember getting to know you guys is probably we had you over at some point, had like dinner with you.
Yeah.
And I talked to you guys and I was like, oh, they're so great. Like, that's the first time I remember.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But it wasn't that long ago. And now I feel like, well, now I know that your parents especially are like treasured friends of mine and of Ryan's. And I feel like that we've gotten to share several really enjoyable conversations, just like that one at Chaco on friendship. And then we've done Christmas Eve together.
So fun. You one and of my I. favorite memories.
Yay, it was fun. It was so fun. Lots of Chinese food, like a shocking amount of Chinese food. We went to an anti-human trafficking event, which was, you took the place of your mother, the fundraiser.
Oh, yeah. The gala. Oh, yeah.
Yes, the gala.
That was so fun.
It was. I mean, yes, if you could use that word.
Well, it was fun driving with you guys. I feel like we had good discussion when we were driving up there.
Yes.
It was fun.
And then you're going to host a lovely tea party coming up. Thank you for having us.
Of course.
And I'm sure we've done other things together, too. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Anyway, we're doing this.
We went to Heave.
That's right.
That was so fun.
So now a few things that I want to say about you. First of all, your permanent smile, which you have on your face now. It is so welcoming, and I do not have that countenance at all. But you emanate with just a body hospitality that I desire to have. And your mom is the same way. And you also seem very flexible. I don't know if that's the right word. But I appreciate that you're like willing to be present with all sorts of people. Mm. People younger than you, I just observe you when you talk with others, and you're maybe flexible is a good word. And you're not too cool for school, I guess, if that makes sense.
I try not to be. There was a moment kind of growing up where I would see all the groups of teenagers, and we would always like, oh, the teenagers, like, we were scared of them because they would never engage with us. And I was like, when I'm a teenager, I want to still engage with people younger than me. I want to treat them like the same. I don't want to kind of turn an eye on them. Yeah. So it's something I try to be intentional about in my life.
Well, it shows. I noticed. Thank you. Praise God. Yeah, you're just so kind that way. Also, when I've been to your home, you make me feel like you're very conscious of how I feel. And that's just very welcoming. Oh, and it's a wonderful gift. Thank you. Like Jesus. So, I just think you seem to have the mentality of what's mine is yours, or, you know. Yeah. And I'll share with you, and even yourself, you share yourself too. So it's been a joy to get to know you. And I'm so glad to keep doing that, even tonight.
Thanks.
Yep. Okay. So we are going to start where I always do, which is your ancient history. Basically, I call it the soil section. But if it's okay, if I just mention your age, is that weird if you share that?
Oh, my age? How old I am?
Yes.
Oh, I'm 19.
Because you're 19. Yeah. And it's just awesome. So we are going to get Autumn's perspective as a young woman. So first question, where did you grow up?
So that's complicated in of itself.
Okay.
I think I'll start with my parents. I'll start with
their story
a little bit. Okay. So my parents weren't saved growing up, but they both came to faith. I think my mom came to faith at a revival. And my dad, I actually talked to him about this past week because I was curious more of the specific story of like, where did this happen?
Wow.
He came to faith at a camp around my age, actually.
Okay.
Which I think is really, really cool. They both came to faith around the same age, and Providence led them both to the same camp where they wanted to serve and work with kids. And, you know, they were on fire for the Lord, so they wanted to do mission work in some way. And so they both, over a summer, wanted to give up their summer and work for this camp called River Valley Ranch in Maryland. And they met there the first year. They didn't really talk at all, but towards the end of the summer, my dad like got the nerve to ask for her number, and then they kept in contact and like called each other over the year. And by the second year, they came back for another year of camp, and they were engaged. So it was
Were they coming from different states?
Yeah. So my mom was in North Carolina, and my dad was in Virginia.
Okay.
So he went to Liberty, and she went to Southeastern. And I think after they got engaged, he ended up moving from Liberty to Southeastern to be with her and kind of pursue that relationship and marriage with her. And so they got married really young. I think my dad was 21 and my mom was 20 or something along those lines. And almost immediately they had Isaiah, my older brother, and then me, and then Seth. So we were three under three growing up. And again, they were new believers and really young and just got married and had babies and were on fire for the Lord. So they wanted to do mission work. And when I think I was two.
You're in North Carolina, though.
We were in North Carolina, but we moved to Turkey, and we were missionaries. I know, complete curveball. They wanted to be missionaries, so we were missionaries in Turkey for a little over a year. It wasn't too long. And different events happened, and they ultimately decided it wasn't the best thing for our family, but we were going to be there. Like, the plan was to be there for our whole lives. But
it's incredible. Three little kids.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot.
Yeah. Was it like specifically to like unreached peoples? Do you know this part of the story, or to like actually a church that was there already?
We didn't know of a church, but there are kind of some things with the organization where there was a Presbyterian church, but like they didn't want to affiliate with them. So that was one of the reasons they kind of came back. It was like, well, there's a church already established here, and like they're meeting believers, and it seems like a godly community. And so what type of work are we doing here?
Yeah.
And that wasn't the only reason, but I think it played a part in it where, you know, we ended up coming back to the States. And I think my mom didn't want us to put us in school there. There's some other things that came about. So we came back to the States, and I was probably, around three-ish, around that age. But yeah, so lived in Turkey for a little bit, came back to the States. I think we moved to Virginia at that point and lived with my grandma because we were trying to find a home and came back from Turkey like, oh, we don't have a house. Like, we stayed with my grandma for a season and then ended up moving into a small house. And I lived there most of my life. We had like a super small period of time where we moved into a different house and then we ended up moving back to the same house.
Okay. So, wow.
Most of my life is spent in this small house in Colonial Heights. That was most of my childhood.
When you say small, is it because you all had to like bunk up in the same room or just the rooms were all tiny?
Yeah, it was, I think there were 3 bedrooms. And at that point, Jack came close around then. So there were 3 boys and 1 girl. So they put all 3 boys in one room. And there was a teeny tiny room that I had for me and then my parents' room. And after some point, it got the tiny room that all 3 boys were in. It was too small. So we had to turn the schoolroom into a room for them. But
yeah,
in total, there were like maybe 7 rooms in the whole house. There was like the kitchen. And then we had a little like living room and then a schoolroom.
Yeah.
And then our bedrooms. And so they were all connected and it was really small. And we had curtains over the schoolroom doors to kind of like give them a little more privacy, but it was so small. So when my mom was pregnant with Nathan, we were like, we need more space.
Yeah.
If we have a 4th boy, there won't be enough room in our house for him. So that's when we ended up moving to our house that we live in now. And that was, I think, around 2019.
Okay.
2018, 2019, I believe.
So you had no schoolroom. I guess we'll get to that at some point, but that's just fun to think about you guys just doing what you had to do in your space with curtains.
And oh, yeah.
All
you had to figure it out.
Yeah. Because it was Colonial Heights, so you had a yard, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Made up
Our yard
maybe.
Was a good size. I mean, it wasn't huge or anything. It was like a normal plot of land, probably, a little bit smaller than y'all's yard in the back.
Around smaller?
That.
Oh,
maybe,
wow.
No, maybe around that size. Yeah, I'm trying to picture your backyard.
It's small.
It's probably around that size. But we had a little bit more of a front yard.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, we always played in the woods. It was our house, and then across the street there was a tree line and behind the houses, and there were woods behind their houses. So we made friends with all the neighbors, and we'd play behind their house in the woods, and that was, so it didn't really bother us that it was small, because we just liked playing outside, and we had the whole woods to explore.
What was the benefit of being the only girl?
I mean, I hear all the horror stories from people who have sisters, and I don't know what it's like, but, you know, they always say you have to share clothes and, you know, get in little petty fights and things. I guess one of my favorite things about being the only girl is I have bodyguards. I have all my brothers that I can always rely on them. Like, even if we get in arguments or, I mean, growing up, kids fight. Like, that's how it was. But they were always there for me whenever it came down to it. And if I was ever in trouble or they thought a boy was going to be mean to me or I was hurt, it was like a click in their brain where they all became super protective of me, the younger and my older brother. So that was one thing. They're all very protective of me. And I think it's really sweet to have my brothers that I can always turn to them. But
so
that's my favorite thing.
Were you the girl in the woods wanting to be rescued, or were you like, come on, everyone, follow me? Like,
oh, goodness. I was definitely more of a the tomboy. I guess I would lead the games. Mm-hmm. I guess it was more of like a mother hen kind of thing where I was like motherly. I wasn't like I have to do everything. I have to lead every game. I would step into that because the boys were younger and the neighborhood boys were also younger. They were my younger brother, like their ages. So I would kind of step up and be like, let's play this game. And then they would say yes or no. And like, no, you're supposed to be doing that. And you're the cop and you're the robber. So I was probably definitely more that way than the rescue kind of girl.
Yeah. So what else were you like as a very young girl?
I was very, well, when I was like a toddler, I wouldn't let any guys hold me but my dad and I think maybe my grandpa. But like if any guy looked at me, I would scowl at them. Like I was like a little girl, like a little baby,
you
like
were
1 and 2.
Aware. Wow.
I was like, no, only my dad can hold me, only my grandpa, no one else. Wow. That's it. So I was definitely like a daddy's girl. That's how I was. So toddler age, very more like, oh, the girls are fine. No boys.
Yeah.
But as I grew older, because of having so many brothers, I was very intense. I was very competitive and intense. And they called me, they would always call me this, spunky. That's what they called me. Mm-hmm. I was very spunky and a little sassy. So I kind of had this like brash, like harshness to me, where over time with different friendships and, you know, being friends with different sweet girls, that kind of softened a little bit.
Yeah.
But definitely growing up with just boys, I was very like, I want to do everything my brothers do. And, yeah. you know, I'd get like hurt or something and it wouldn't bother me because I was like, oh, that's just because it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
So different things like that. But
would your siblings, they would describe you that same way then? Even looking back now, would they even remember that part of you? Like,
oh yeah, they would probably say I was mean.
Yeah.
I had a time period where I was just in the thick of it and I was just mean to them. I was. And over time, God definitely gave us a friendship where mm-hmm. I had like a friendship with my brothers. Like, whereas before you feel like you're at odds all the time.
Gotcha.
So I was definitely very mean, but I think I kind of saw that where I was mean to my brothers. I was like, I don't want to be mean to them anymore. I want to have a friendship with them. I want to be included in their life. I don't want it to be like, oh, when we're older and we have kids, they don't want to see me because I was so mean to them
yeah.
throughout our childhood. So when I, you know, got to like, I don't know, probably late middle school, I became more aware of that. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I want to be intentional about building relationships with my brothers.
So was it hard for you to make friendships with girls if the neighborhood kids were mostly boys?
I don't think so. I think it was because I've always been outgoing, but I think it was just a lack of like girls to be friends with yeah. in our circles. We had one family of like, I think they had six or seven girls. They had a lot of girls.
Yeah.
So when they were introduced into our lives, it was like amazing for me because I could have all the girl time with them yeah. and do our nails and makeup and play with all the girly things.
It's like
a whole new world for me.
World, yeah.
And kind of seeing how they interact with each other because they were very sweet to each other and Aww. They were very kind.
That's precious.
And I was used to the boys and the harshness of boys and how they
yeah.
interact. So being friends with these sweet girls helped me a lot
mm-hmm.
As a young girl. But no, I don't think it was a difficulty until we hit like the puberty, middle school, mm-hmm. early high school, where all the girls are like going through it and there's all the cattiness. And that's when it became harder for me to have friendships just because there were some things that I had where I was like, I don't want to be involved in this type of interaction, these types of conversations.
Yeah.
But growing up when I was younger, that wasn't as much an issue.
So do you ever drive by this old property and does it seem so distant from you? I mean, is it near where you live now? Like, do you ever
get to go? It's like 5 minutes down the road. And honestly, yeah. I do. Whenever I visit my grandma, because it's in between our house and our grandma's house, there will be times I'm like, I'll just take a little, like, a little look at it. Because, and looking at it now, like, the new people that live there kind of did different things to it. So mm-hmm. it's not how I specifically remember it. But it is like going on that street is like a glimpse into my childhood.
Warp,
it is every time I drive by because the same people lived there that used to live there when I was there. Like even the neighbors across the street have been there forever.
Yeah.
And like they have the same cars, they have the same house, everything's same.
Wow.
So seeing it is definitely takes me back. I'm like, oh, wow.
So your house now is bigger by comparison.
Oh, yeah.
So when you see the small house, what to you comes to mind is just like the blessing of that small, because both are blessings.
Oh yeah. I talk about this when we were really young. We were poor. We really didn't have much money, but I always think about this, like my parents were really good at not making that something we had to bear. That was not a burden for us. Mm-hmm. So I never knew that growing up. It was just, this is what we have to eat for dinner. When we go into a store, we're going to get things on mom's list. We're not getting whatever we want. Like,
yeah.
It was just something I grew up with. And again, we always played either with Legos or things inside imaginary play, or we played outside with like world building. And we have like a whole world in the woods that we'd play. So I never saw it as, oh, we don't have a big house or we don't have this. I was just like, oh, this is our house. So it was never something that I was kind of discontent with as a child, where I was like, oh, look at what they have. Look at their huge house. I wish I had that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that mentality about it. Mm-hmm. And so when I see the house, it brings back all those memories and it's sweet for me. I like it.
So for like Christmas and stuff like that, was it like everybody's packed in with the tree and it's cozy?
Yeah, I loved it. Our house is always cozy. I still feel like it's cozy now, even though we have more space in our house. Mm-hmm. Walking in my house, like, or after I've been on a trip or even after a day of work, I'm always like, oh, like I can breathe when I walk in. It always feels homey and cozy to me.
Yeah.
So it's always felt, I mean, maybe that's just because of my mom and how she's made her spaces feel. Because again, without her presence, I feel like it wouldn't be the same at all.
Right.
But no matter where we've been, she's definitely made that something that I've felt.
Yeah. So my girls have been up to your room. They're like, Autumn's room. Were you always like that when you were younger, even? Like,
oh, goodness.
The room is
I feel like I've always had this love for interior design, but not in the sense of like, I want to do this for other people. It's kind of like, this is how I want my space to feel. It's kind of like you have a feeling when you walk in. So I always think about how I want my future home to feel, how I want every room to feel. And I think the home is such a place where like, it's like a place of witness where when you bring people in, you can just by how you make your home feel, it can either glorify God and like scream like, oh, this is from the Lord, or it cannot. Yeah. And so like my parents always tell stories of when they were first coming to faith, some of the biggest, what's the word I'm thinking of? Influences, like something that really struck out to them was when they went into a home of believers and they all like sat together for dinner and their home was full of laughter and love and like warm smells. And they both have that testimony. And so when I hear that from my parents, like that's something, because they told us that when we were really young. And I guess as a young girl, I was like, I want my home to be that way.
Yeah.
Where when I have people in my home, they feel the warmth of it. They feel the love of the Lord. Like it's something that glorifies Him. And so I try to mimic that in my space, the little space that I have now. Yeah. I try to mimic that, but it's something that I'm all about when it comes to my future home or wherever I am. Mm-hmm. So I think when I was younger, I always loved decorating. So I'd put like, I had a whole wall that was Bible verses. I just put my favorite Bible verses or my friend's favorite Bible verses on the wall or quotes that I loved, or I'd hang up all my paintings because I used to be more into like acrylic painting. And so I put all my paintings on the wall. Hang if anything I really liked. But over time that's refined where it's like, oh no, these are the specific elements that I enjoy. So how do I like color theory and different things like that come into play? Like how does this color look with this color? How do you bring in textures and tones? Like that's come
living things.
Right. Oh yeah, plants. Yeah. I love plants. That's come in the past like 5 years. That's been a more recent thing that I've been really into.
How did you get into it? Was it all kind of intuitive or?
I think I always had a little bit of a knack for it, but we really liked watching kind of the house flipping shows. Mm-hmm. We had a season where we watched a ton of those, like Fixer Upper.
Yes.
I loved it. I was like, I love seeing them take a space and then the next cut is like this beautiful space. You're like, how did you do that? So we'd watch those shows. And then I always saw, I guess whenever I walked into people's homes, and okay, this is how I feel about y'all's home. If a space kind of embodies how the family is, like you meet the family and you kind of see how they are and their home reflects that, I'm always like, I love this house. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not specifically how I would design everything,
right.
If it reflects the family, I'm like, I love this. There's something about it I always take. And so I look at everything. So when I come to your house, that's what I'm doing because I'm like, this house completely reflects Latario's. Like I see you guys in your home.
Yeah.
So I love your house. And so some of it was that where I'd go into people's homes. I'm like, I love this space. It feels like them, like who they are. And so those are the little things.
I love that. So this is going to pivot to people. Who were you closest to growing up?
Probably my friends. There was a time where I really put them above everyone else in my life, where it was like my friends are the most important. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gets into kind of my idolization of it later on in life. But definitely at a young age, it was like my friends. Like, they matter so much to me. And I think I put them above even my relationships with my brothers for a while. And that's kind of why some of those things went downhill, or we had struggles. But so my friends definitely, but when it came down to it, no matter what friends I had in my life, it was always my parents too. Like, mm-hmm. I was always close to my parents and love them and would go to them for their counsel and wisdom. So my parents and then my friends very early on. And as I grew up, I started to realize, you know, maybe I won't always have these friendships. I always have my brothers here.
Right.
So I want to value my friendships with my brothers.
Yes.
So I started being intentional about spending time with them and being kind to them and being interested in what they're interested in.
Are you like over 10, 12 at this point or under when you're thinking
about
this?
That's over 10, 12.
Okay. So definitely. Older. Yeah.
I would, or around that age, I would say. Before 10, 12 was definitely friendships with others above them. After 10, 12, I think I started to make that realization, like, I want to value them.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard to do? They were like, what is she doing? Why is she asking me to hang out?
I don't know. Kind of. I mean, at first you get a little, like, awkward. Like, I wouldn't. So one thing, I love to sing, even if it's just goofy singing. But I was like, oh, I can't sing in front of my brothers. They're going to make fun of me. But now I'll, like, sing anything in front of them. And we just sing and goof off together. So, like, over time, you become more comfortable and, like, you're silly together. But I don't know. I kind of just, I don't think they ever pushed me away. Mm. I think it was just me living in, like, where I just wanted my friendships with my friends. And so I'd stay in my room and I would just talk to them or call them or text them. And I wouldn't value going and being with my brothers and doing what they're doing. And so, you know, I had some different things happen with friendships that kind of left me humbled and low, where I was like, oh, God has put these people in my life right here, and he was showing me that. And so then I don't remember the specific instant, but there was a time where I just decided to go and sit with them, even if I didn't talk to them, just sitting with them and doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that clicked in me. So I started doing that more and kind of just built over time.
Well, I guess I'm curious, are you all very different or more similar than not?
I always say this. We definitely live up to our last name.
Okay.
So our last name is Lachlan, but it's spelled like Laughlin.
Yes.
And we all laugh so much. I mean, our house is heavily sarcastic, so we're always joking and laughing. Like, I can't think of a time where we're not laughing. It's just always a part of our house. We're loud and we laugh a lot. And that's just, those character traits kind of sum up all of us. And we're all.
Really all.
All of us, yeah. And we're all very opinionated. We have opinions and we stand on them and, like, we believe strongly about things. Mm-hmm. So I'd say we believe strongly and we laugh a lot.
Your mom, too.
Oh, yeah. My mom, definitely. She's definitely more quiet about it. She's more introverted.
Mm-hmm.
But she still has strong opinions about things and she stands firm on them. She's just not as, what's the word? Forward about it, maybe?
Yeah.
But the rest of us were... You can ask us anything. We're going to tell you what we think about it.
Yeah.
It's just how we are. So we have some lively conversations in our house.
That's funny. Yeah. Is there ever a time you're like, we need space from each other? Or no?
Yeah. I feel like it happens with me and my mom, where guys in general tend to be more sarcastic. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of guy humor. But so sometimes me and my mom are like, overstimulating. We're like, we've had a very long day. And we can't do all the sarcasm right now. And so we'll kind of do our own thing for a little bit. So definitely us more. I think there have been moments.
Is it like, I'm going to get really intense about this Dorito right here? Like, can it go like anywhere? Like these opinions?
I think when we were younger, it was. I feel like we rein it in a little bit now.
Like my chip preference, you all are going to know.
I mean, not as much. It used to be more that way. We're like, okay, we got to calm down on this chip. But now it's more when it comes to anything like related to scripture, theology, or politics, or anything, the deeper conversations.
Yeah.
Like the surface level. We'll talk about it, but we're kind of like, it's okay.
It's all right. It doesn't matter that much.
Yes. You had your fun in that.
Right.
That arena.
We've learned.
Yes.
We've grown in that.
So is there any story your family likes to tell about you? Or they're like, Autumn, we got this story about her.
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think what they would tell. There's a few that I think about. There are some that we have as a family. Okay, I'll tell one. Seth was probably like 1.5. So I was probably 3-ish, 2 or 3. Maybe 3, 4. We were at the beach. We had like a beach trip. This might have been when we were in Turkey, I think. But anyways, so I'm sitting here like building my cute little sandcastle. And I love my little sandcastle. Like I'm doing all the details and everything. Mm-hmm. And he just comes over, a little 1.5-year-old, like doing his little penguin waddle, because that's what the 1.5-year-olds do. He just fist like slams it and like breaks the whole thing. We have a video of it, so we always laugh about it. And I'm like, we would always call him, his nickname is Boogas, because he always had a line of boogers coming out of his nose. So I was like, Boogas! And I was so mad at him, I took my sandcastle, my sand right there, and I moved over to another spot, and he's just stomping on the spot where I was. So that's when we talk about a lot, when we're reminiscing.
You probably look so cute. So little.
Yeah.
Little
we were both really cute. We were
funky. Did you have a lot of hair then, too?
Oh, I always had hair. I had jet black hair. Whoa. When I was born.
That's wild.
Just a head full of
black hair. Is your hair dyed? Or
right no, now? No. It became, like, it turned blonde when I was a toddler. And then it darkened to this color. Okay. So nobody would believe it. When you look at baby photos, I have like black hair.
That's crazy. Was it like all your siblings like that too? Like
I don't know if the boys. Color? I know. Yeah, they were. I think they were more bald babies. Some of them.
Okay.
Or had a little bit of hair. They didn't have as much as I did. I have the most hair out of all of them.
Well, what's your nationality background?
My mom is Puerto Rican. Okay. I mean, she has some other blood on that side, like some European and different things like that, but mostly Puerto Rican, because my grandpa is, you know, mostly that. Then my dad's side is definitely more of the European, like Scottish, Irish, different things like that. So Hispanic on my mom's side and then European on my dad's, mostly, but there's kind of a mix of everything.
Yeah. So where did you go to school?
So I was homeschooled up till middle school. My mom taught us, or we had curriculums. Like, eventually we got to the point, especially in elementary school, like late elementary school, where we could kind of, or at least I was this way, where I could do most of my work independently. Mm-hmm. So I took a lot of my subjects and I would just read the lessons and do things by myself.
You said at what age? Sorry.
Like late elementary school.
Late elementary. Okay.
I pretty quickly started doing things independently if I could, especially things I was like really loved, like reading or literature, anything history related. I really love those. So I would kind of take it up and do it. When I got to middle school, me and my brother were put in Logos Online School. So we did that through middle and high school till I graduated. And they're kind of like how everyone's transferred to Zoom classes in 2020, but we were doing that way before.
Yeah.
So you have like a classroom of kids, like they're just all over the world. And then you have your teacher and you still have like a whiteboard and everything that you're looking at. Like, it's crazy. But so it was definitely like a classroom feel. And then we would talk to our classmates outside of that in different like texting groups and things
every
like that.
Every subject. Middle school was online.
Middle school. So we kind of slowly got up to it. We started with like 2 classes and then worked our way up more and more. But I think the first year I only had 2 classes. But after that, I was mostly full-time. Like, high school, all of the years I was fully in Logos. Middle school, we slowly transferred. Because if you went from, like, fully homeschooled all the way to, you know, online private school, it would be a hurdle.
How was that for you as, like, an independent learner? Was that something that was actually harder for you to be, like, totally under the teacher's direction?
I think that it was really helpful for me and my mom's relationship. Just because I was very stubborn. I'm still stubborn, but I've kind of learned to rein it in. But I was always very stubborn. And we would just, like, clash on certain subjects where it was just hard for both of us. And so it's better for me to be taught by someone else and taught under someone else. So in some ways it was, I think it definitely freed up me and my mom's relationship where we could kind of just, you know, I could see her as my mom, as a companion and not teacher, like just being able to free that up was really helpful for both of us. Mm-hmm. So in some ways it was really good for me. I think it was better for me than not, but I was very nervous. Like I did not want to do it. I was like, oh, class, like I have to talk in front of all these people. And
yeah.
And I mean, like growing up, we would do co-op. So it wasn't like we were completely outside of it. And we would do like elective classes at co-op groups and things.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had like classroom settings, but this was like fully immersed in it. Yeah. So it, I was definitely very nervous, but it was over time I started to appreciate more and more and I loved it. So.
So how, what role did your mom then have to play in the online school?
So starting off, I only had a few classes online. Right. So I still had some where she taught me, but again, it was a lot of it was independent work. But once I hit high school, I kind of just took it all on myself and I would report to my teachers. So she kind of was hands off on that for mm-hmm. me, at least. I think my brothers had a harder time with that where she had to check up on them more and be more involved. Like, did you do your work? Did you do this? With me, I would just get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, it kind of led to them like, oh, she can just do it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes I would slack off a little bit or maybe I should have read something more.
Yeah.
But that's part of like being independent and kind of taking that on. But
when you're younger, were there sports involved with that? Little activities? What kind of things were you involved in there?
Oh, yeah. We were part of a homeschool group where we would have soccer and different sports that we would play all through elementary school. We also did like nature walks or their skate night. Like they had a bunch of programs that you could do with other homeschool families. So we were always doing field trips and things with people. We also had like close friends, like most of my friends were also homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
So we would do a lot of stuff with them, kind of like how NCA does the cohorts with people. Mm-hmm. We would do a lot of that. When we got to late elementary school, we started doing some elective classes. So I took a culinary class and then I took American Sign Language, which I loved both. They were really fun. But we went to a co-op school to do that. And then we were always in sports throughout all of that. I mean, throughout high school, all of it. I did basketball for a season. I did volleyball in high school for homeschool. And we would travel and kind of play private schools. So we were all in a bunch of sports and things like that.
Fun. What was faith like in your household? How did that take shape? Or what was the shape of that in your home?
I feel like it was a conversation that we always had. Like we were always talking about scripture and things related to it.
I guess I never asked you, were your grandparents Christians? That you know of?
It's kind of...
Maybe, or any faith thing. In your family?
Maybe great-grandparents. But grandparents, my mom or my dad's side, they came to faith a little bit later. Not my grandpa that we know of before he passed away. We're hoping, like, we still, you know, the Lord has grace on people. Like, they said scripture to him and like read it to him before he passed. So maybe he did mm-hmm. have faith before he died. Like we don't know that reality yet. So, but there wasn't like a active fruit in his life. Maybe at the end something happened. We just don't know. My grandma came to faith a little bit later in life and my step grandpa on my dad's side. And then my mom's side, my grandma also came to faith later in life after my mom, my grandpa, not yet, but
yeah,
we still have faith. I mean, the Lord works in wonderful ways and anything can happen. So
yeah.
We still pray and I don't think anyone would say they're atheists. It was just like a complicated relationship. So
I understand that very well. So for your parents, they were kind of like, we got to figure this out. We got to do something we haven't seen before.
I think they had a little bit of, like, I think there was more of a culture during my grandma's time where people just went to church because that's what you did.
Okay.
So I think my dad would have some of that growing up where he'd go to church every now and then. But it was definitely not, like, talked about in the home. It wasn't something they lived out at all. It was kind of just you're expected as a society to do this.
Right.
Or maybe it was just our little small town, his little small town. That was more of an expectation. So I think he had a little bit of that growing up. I don't think my mom had as much, but yeah, they came to Faith a little bit later. But,
okay.
Yeah.
What are your memories of, yeah, Faith? When did you come to Christ?
When I did, personally?
Mm-hmm.
That's always tricky when I talk about it, because I can't really pinpoint a moment. Like, I know, obviously, you can't just not have a moment where, like, you have to have time where you were...
Regeneration.
Right. But I can't pinpoint a specific moment where I feel like I didn't know the Lord.
Yeah.
Even from a really young age, there's never a time where I was like, I don't know God, and now I do. Like, I feel like he was always in my life. So it's hard for me to kind of point to, at this age, I accepted him into my life, or like, this age, he saved me from this. I just don't have that moment. It's kind of always been there for me.
But you have memories of being young and not just like going to church and that's where you heard about God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit, but in your actual home.
Oh, like, yeah. It was like in everything.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that it was, that's my testimony, is my parents were really, what's the word? Intentional about that, where they wanted it to be. Like, they wanted us to grow up and be faithful Christians and know the Lord. So they really ingrained it into us early on. We did had family worship. We would sing hymns together. We were always talking about the Lord and, like, what the Bible says about situations or anything. Like, we were always – it was a discussion that we always had in our house. Like, kind of – the Lord was never disconnected from what we did and how we lived. He mm-hmm. was always there. So that was something my parents did a great job of.
Yeah.
They were very –
How did that, I'm sure it's way too much to talk about, but how does that take shape as everyone gets older?
I think it becomes, the teaching is different. So early on, it's the basics, the fundamentals, like mm-hmm. we're saved, you know, because of Christ's work, you know, it's not because of anything we have done, all the basics, you kind of get your kids to understand. And they always were like, you have to understand the gospel. Like, this is the most important thing. You have to know this. Like, this is what you need to take away. Like, my dad was very, I always remember those conversations from very young, just like during family worship, he would say, you have to remember this. This is very important for your whole life. You have to know this. Even if you guys aren't paying attention to anything else I'm saying right now, this is what you have to remember. Like, he would really be intentional about that. But as we got older, I think we would start bringing them questions, kind of like,
gotcha.
You know, how do I react to this? What about this? What does the Bible say about this? What do you think about this thing and this? So we would bring more questions, and it got deeper, where you have to be, I guess, more specific about theology, like specific things when it comes to the theology, the harder topics, the mm-hmm. maybe more confusing topics. Those. So as we grew up, it was just more and more of that, I guess.
Well,
that answers your question.
You've already said that you all have opinions, but was there anyone in your household where you're like, oh, he's got another question, oh my goodness? Or was it you, like, oh, here we go, like, we're gonna be here all night with
I don't
this
know
question.
I mean, I think if so normally how it works is if one of us has something we have to do after family yeah. worship, we're kind of like itching. When we were growing up, we were itching to be done with it. Mm-hmm. Because as we grew, we saw the importance of these conversations. So, and as I grew, that was my personal thing. I really valued that time where we could kind of have those conversations. And a lot of it was also just, you know, over the dinner table or in the car, like, or after we watched a movie. Like, we'd always just talk about things together. And I started to really enjoy those conversations where I wanted to hear what my dad was saying, what my mom was saying, what my brother said. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have those conversations. I still have that. Like, we talked last night about a bunch of stuff. It's just something so normal in my life. Maybe early on, I had more of that where I was like, I'm itching to be done because I want to do this other thing. Yeah. But as I grew up, I started to really enjoy it and be like, oh, this is really important. There will be a time where I can't have this right. every day like I can now. So now I really do value those conversations. I look forward to having them and, you know, being a part.
I'm trying to think of how this would take shape because I can imagine as yeah. people get older, everyone is doing their own thing.
Right.
So how
right.
do you actually get together?
So now it is definitely that way because I work full time. Mm-hmm. I'm not home much. My brother's moved out. My younger brother just graduated and he's working and he's doing school. So he's like, we all have different schedules that are very different from each other. So as we've gotten older, we've had to be very intentional about setting aside time. Like now we try to do Monday nights where we try to be home for dinner. And like, that's what we did yesterday, have family worship, sing together and just talk together. So as we've grown up, definitely being intentional of like, we love you guys. We want to have these conversations because we know soon everyone's going to be, you know, doing their own thing, having their own homes, having their own families. So let's be intentional about this is our time to talk about these things. This is our time to be together and just enjoy each other. So as, yeah, definitely intentional time as we've gotten older. But when your schedules are all the same thing, you kind of just work that into your life. But yeah, I know my parents now, like, you know, my mom will take me out and we'll go shopping or we'll go get coffee or something. Or my dad will take me places sometimes and we'll do something together just so we can have that time to connect and talk, like, what's going on in life. Or like, they'll just sit me down and like say, hey, we just want to catch up, like talk to you about life and like what's going on right now, what's going on in your heart and your mind. And we'll just sit and talk with each other. And I like those conversations. I love them because I value my parents' wisdom. So
yeah.
But yeah, definitely intentional time now that we're older.
Is there anything else aside from that, that you're like, I want to take this into my family someday, something that you grew up doing?
Oh, there's so many things.
Yeah.
Oh, we definitely, you know, my parents are, or my, yeah, definitely my dad was like, when we watch things, when we take in media, not turning our brains off, being intentional about what is this doing to our hearts and our minds, like having those conversations, what are they saying through this? Yeah. So definitely like actively thinking about things and also just how much they ingrained the Lord into our lives. Like it's not something we disconnect. He is in every aspect, in every thing in our lives. So I generally take inspiration from that. I want it to be in everything. Like I don't want there to be a disconnect. Like we only go to church and then it's not in our lives. I want it to be everywhere where people, you know, my kids see, you know, places where you know, they have like, oh, they don't do that. That's not normal. Like that's not a normal thing. Like I want it to be a normal thing. And then like, I think laughter and grace, grace is a big one. Being very gracious with my kids when they mess up, or like that's important to me because my parents were very gracious. Whenever we messed up or we were in sin or anything, there was always grace, and that's how God is towards us. So I think if you are to mimic the Lord and who he is and you're to be like him, then that should be, you know, mimicked in your home. That should be something in your home. And so grace is a huge part of that.
Does that mean no consequence?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
So there's, of course there's consequences, but it's not met, I guess, with the anger where it's like, I'm going to condemn you and be so angry with you that, because, you know, especially at a young age, if you're always met with anger, your kid's like, and, you know, I wouldn't want to go back to someone who would just scream at me, yell at me if I would ever messed up.
Yeah.
You know, like my parents aren't perfect. That would happen sometimes. But for most, they would always, you know, make it right and we'd make it right with each other. But for most of situations, there would be consequences. There would, you know, because that's how the world is. But they still would end, like if I was in sin and they were coming to me and talking to me about it, it always end in like, yeah, but this is the gospel. This is truth. This is what the Lord says. This is this. And there was still grace through it all. And grace doesn't mean they wouldn't punish us or we wouldn't be in trouble or have things taken away. Like that's part of it. Because if you, you know, there's a whole verse of you discipline the child that you love. Like that's,
yeah.
So no, it doesn't mean no consequences. It's just, I guess, not that making sure you're being slow to anger
and right.
loving and having love throughout all of it, like saturated in love.
Yeah. Games are important to your family. When I went to your house, I'm like, are there 100 games right here?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of games, when we had a Christmas Eve thing and we played that one game, I forgot the name. It was so much fun.
Farkle.
Yeah. It was so much fun. I loved it.
Who plays those games your house?
We used to play them a lot more than we do.
Yeah.
Because again, as schedules change, it's harder to kind of come together and play them.
Yeah.
If we have people over, like for my brother's birthday, we played Secret Hitler. I don't know if you play that. It's really fun. It's a fun game, like a fun party game. So if we have people over, we play them. If we have family staying with us, we play them because we love, I don't know if we say Catan. I don't know if you say Catan.
I'm not going to tell.
I know a lot of people say Catan, but we love, I say Catan. We love Catan. And my uncle and aunt really love it, and my parents love it. So when they get together, they have like these heated, super long championships they play for hours. And, you know, you can hear them from every room in the house because there's
lots of food, I bet.
Oh, yeah, they love it. Like, we've made medals for it. Whoever wins, like, gets the medal. So we definitely
like one that gets passed back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, so we have stuff like it's fantastic. But yeah, if we have people over, we'll play them. Sometimes we'll just pull one out every now and then if we're all together. Or I really love Dutch Blitz card games like that, where you can kind of just pull them out on a whim and it's not like a whole board and super involved. It's just a quick little game. So we'll do that. But not as much as we used to. I wish we did a little bit more, but
I just had someone mention to me this week, have you ever played Bunko? And I was like, no, but I know my mom did with all these ladies at tables. And she's like, let's do Bunko. I'm like, yes.
What is Bunko?
I don't know. It's some old lady game.
I love old lady
with dice. But you're like moving. I don't really know. Huh. I just like have this childhood memory, you know, of going and watching all the ladies like move. And it's like a dynamic kind of just loud, fun chance kind of game.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. So there's a lot of movement and we'll see what happens. Remnant Bunko.
Ooh, are you going to do it? Like, are you guys going to play soon? Or
I hope so. Ooh, I don't know. Okay. Like I said, I got a baby coming. I don't know what I'm doing.
Saying, I was like, are you trying to do a tournament of Bunko with your baby coming?
I'm always trying to play some kind of game. Okay, where are we? Okay, when did you first start to feel like an adult?
Oh goodness, I don't know. I mean, I think there was, especially in high school, it's hard because you're trying, especially towards, you know, sophomore, senior year, you're trying to enter into adulthood and like you're a young woman, you're trying to figure out what that looks like because you're like, oh, high school's coming to a close. Like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And so while you're taking those steps and doing those things, you're kind of in between two circles where it's like, oh, you're not a kid anymore, but you're not fully an adult yet. So adults don't see you as an adult, but kids don't see you as a kid. So you're kind of in this weird in-between stage where you're like, I don't really know what to do. And so there were definitely some people in my life where they just treated me like an adult. And they would talk to me like one, they would ask me. And that was super helpful for me as a young woman because they just, there was no, oh, you're immature, you're a little kid. Like they would hold me to that standard. And that was so helpful for me growing into it. But I don't know, probably the year after I graduated, because I graduated early. I graduated at 17 and then I took a gap year on my third gap year. And I just decided to work full time.
Okay.
And so kind of going into full time work and not having school was a reality check where you're like, oh, wait, there's so much more outside of school. Like there's a whole life that you live outside of your time at school. So that was definitely when I started feeling like one because I was just doing the motions and walking through it. And I was independent a lot more than I was previously.
Yeah. So I don't think you have mentioned jobs yet, but I feel like you've had a lot of jobs, right?
Jobs.
Like once and I'm like, what? You did what?
I know. People ask me that and I'm like, there's a lot. There's a lot of jobs.
What are a few you want to throw out there?
Oh, goodness. Most of it has been in the childcare realm, whether it's nursery assistants. I worked at a preschool. I'm working at NCA now. I'm a nanny. I've been nannying for over a year. So most of the jobs have been centered around that. I was a camp counselor.
Yeah.
But then you have some like random ones. Like I was a barista and I loved being that. Like, I still loved that job. I would do it in a heartbeat. If someone was like, hey, do you want to come work a Saturday? I was like, yes.
Maybe it was how old you were that made me go, what? Not necessarily the job.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean,
when did you start working?
When I was 12.
Yes, that's it. I was like, there was something that I was like, what?
Most people have that reaction. I started independently babysitting at 12.
Okay.
But then the jobs, as I got older, became more involved. So, like, there was a random little time in there when I worked at a winery. Like,
that's it.
I was a nanny at 13 over a summer, like, just random jobs. I was working from a really young age.
Mm-hmm. Because you wanted money? Because you just, why not? I mean.
I don't know. I think I was kind of, so I've always looked a little older, me and my older brother. I mean, my older brother was like 6 foot by the time he was 13.
Yes.
I've been this height since I was 12. Like, I've looked this way for a long time. I've just always looked a little older than okay. I am. So you kind of, people start to treat you a little older. That kind of makes you mature in some ways a little faster because you're being, you know, treated like you're 2 years older than you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also I think because there weren't a ton of friendships with people and I didn't have a huge circle of friends or yeah. friends that were into all the pop culture. I was kind of just like me and my brothers and a few select friends. I didn't have a lot of people. I was very responsible. I had a lot of younger brothers.
I was gonna say, was this like after school when, or would you just work during the day and do your school later?
I would work on weekends when it came to like babysitting, sometimes a random night here and there. But when it got into the more involved work, it was either after school or weekend times. Mm-hmm. Because people don't realize, like, you can do a lot of work on weekends. And so, like, young girls, like, go Friday, Saturday, spend your days working.
Yeah.
Not only will it, you make money, but it'll also build a lot of skill sets. So mm-hmm. I would work a lot of weekends. That was, instead of, like, going out and hanging out, I would do a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then some, like, evenings or late afternoons during the school week. But mostly weekend work.
How would you find your jobs?
People were, I mean, I always loved working with kids from a really, like, from as old as I could. I had my baby dolls and then I had working with kids. So people would see that I had this, like, love for it, this talent for it. And they would kind of just reach out, like, oh, I know this person who needs help with this. You love this type of work. Would you be interested? Or, you know, friends of my grandparents or my parents or anything. So mostly just other people reaching out to me. Because they needed a position to fill. I think the winery job, that was one of the only ones that I interviewed for because I had I knew a friend of a family member or something
mm-hmm.
that worked there and they said it was a cool job. And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Like, that seems like something I'd enjoy. So, yeah.
Where is a winery down south? I'm trying to think. Or did you travel up?
It wasn't far from our house. It's, I don't know if you know the Boulevard Street.
No.
And Glen Heights. Anyways, the Boulevard Street, you just go down towards Chester.
Okay.
It's on the way there. It's a really tiny one.
Okay.
But it's cute and quaint.
So was there any jobs that your parents had to step in with discernment and be like, no? Like, how did that all work out? Thinking of a young girl.
I didn't have any instances where they're like, that's a bad idea. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because even before I take a job, like, I would always go to them, like, what do you think about this? There was only one instance where they were like, you might need to leave. And that was just a job. I worked at a preschool and the leadership was really bad and they wouldn't even show up. And they were they were just putting me in dangerous situations where I just had the kids by myself or they're endangering the kids. Like,
there
was so much
Yikes.
Going on.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Where, like, the kids just, it wasn't a safe environment because they didn't have enough people on staff or it was just poor leadership. So, during that time, they, you know, they were, like, recommended, maybe you should leave this job. Maybe that's, but, you know, I love the kids. And I was like, I don't want to leave them with people who aren't going to care for them. So, it's hard for me to kind of leave. But then they're like, this will be better for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you should leave. So, that's the only time I had a situation like that.
Do you plan to go to college? Do we want to? Does it matter?
Not at the moment. Yeah, I don't have any plans right now. I mean, if there's anything I'm interested in terms of, like, I want more information on this. Like, one of those is not nursing particularly, but having a basic knowledge of health and, like, first aid. Because, I mean, I have, like, first aid certifications and CPR certifications, but kind of having a more in-depth knowledge of that is something I value, but I don't want to be a nurse. So I can take, like, some online courses, things that I've looked into, like, okay, what can I take where I can just get more information about this?
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few things like that in my life where I'm like, oh, that I want to know more about this and have some skill in this, but it's not to the level of college where I would need a degree or I would need to go to school for it. So at the moment, I don't have anything, but
What was your parents' push on that growing up? Was it always going to be your decision? Were they like, you know, you really should think about college? Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they did a good job of kind of leaving it up to us. Whereas, like, you know, what do you want to do with your life? With me particularly, I mean, I guess we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But I didn't have anything I was super passionate about where I was like, I need to go to school for this. And there was a time where I considered one college, but it was so far away across the country in Idaho. And it just, I'd be all on my own and I'd have to work and pay rent and do all that. And it would just be too much. Like, I just couldn't do it. I also wasn't, I think I just enjoyed the culture there better than the actual school. I was like, all these things seem fun and these people seem fun. But when it came down to the actual school, So they weren't super pushy about it. They were kind of like, whatever you want to do, this is, you know, we'll support you in these things. Like, if you really want to go to college, you really want this, we'll help you figure this out. But it just wasn't something for me. It just wasn't something on my mind, especially senior year. I was like, just don't really have anything.
So you talked about ladies' friendships. How did you navigate boys? How did your parent, how did that go? Were you, did you even care about them?
Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah.
Okay. You're red now.
Oh, goodness. Well, so growing up with so many brothers that are very protective of you, I always had this mindset like I was doing something wrong if I even talked to a boy.
Okay.
But like if I had like a close relationship or friendship with a boy, I was like, oh, this is like wrong. This is wrong, which it's not. It's not wrong. But I kind of have this mindset because they were always so protective. I was like, oh, it's wrong for me to even be super engaging with guys. Or I'm like, you know, because we would have friends. I would have friendships with guys, but it wasn't personal. It was like all in a group. We're friends with a family. We're friends with the kids of this family. But as I got into middle school and high school, I mean, I definitely had like the silly crushes and I don't know, the silly little things, but I don't know. I never...
Were your parents okay with that?
Yeah. They weren't... As long as I wasn't being foolish. And I wasn't. Like, I would never... I was never the girl to be like, I'm going to sneak off with a guy. That was never me. I would never do something like that. Just because it's just not who I am and how I see relationships. Or even, like, liking a guy. I could never like a guy that didn't like me. I know that sounds silly. Yeah. It's just... I couldn't do one-sided relationships or one-sided anything. So, and that's how I've always been. So, because I believe also like relationships and dating, that's for marriage and for the purpose of marriage only. And I knew like as a young girl, I'm not going to be dating these boys. Like I'm 13.
And your parents would specifically say that to you? Like
what?
That? Dating is for marriage. Like,
oh yeah. That I mean, that's just something in our house that we grew up with. And I still believe that to be the case. Like if you're going to be intentionally dating someone, it should be for the purpose of marriage. And I always believed that growing up. So, I don't know. My crushes were silly, but they were never to the point of I would act on anything or sneak out or anything like that. It was kind of just like a, he's cute. And you know, you're like a silly girl.
I'm going to get a little more serious. Do you have, if looking back, maybe any obstacles that you had to overcome? What did you learn? You can bring friendship in now or talk about something else if you want. Your choice.
Obstacles.
It could be like a situation. Well, some people are like, okay, I had to move in the middle of high school and that had an effect on me. Or it could be something internal like I was so, this is not you, but painfully shy that I had to really grow through this. I don't know if obstacle is the right word or just challenges, I guess, or
I mean, I'm trying to think of which ones. There are definitely a lot. Kind of when I was in middle school, I really wanted to become more feminine, so I was like, I want to be a feminine and beautiful woman, like
not feminist, feminine,
because I was a tomboy. So I was like, I want to be lovely. I don't want to be this like harsh, brash tom girl or tomboy. I want to be someone who's feminine, lovely, and I want to be a godly woman and be a woman like how God says in scripture, how I should be. So that's when I really first started taking that on, like trying to own my faith in that way a little bit and think about that. Like, what type of Christian do I want to be? What type of person do I want to be in life? So kind of trying to figure that out as I grew up, like how, what does it mean to be a godly one? Yeah. What does it mean to be feminine and lovely?
Did you start externally or did you internally? I don't know.
Probably a mix of both. Probably maybe more externally a little bit. Because again, you have like the harsh tomboyish.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't as harsh as I used to be when I was a little younger at that point. But that was when I was really like, oh, I want to be, you know, more girly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of trying to navigate that. But mm-hmm. also, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit more, just understanding weakness and strength and when I should be relying on God's strength and not my own.
Right.
Because I would often fall into, I want to do everything by myself. I want to handle all these things on my own. I want to do this. Like, I don't want anyone else to have to deal with this but me. I can do it all by myself, and I can't. Mm-hmm. So God would often humble me and take me really low to the point where mm-hmm. I had to cry out, like, Lord, please help me. Save me from this. Help me in this. I don't know what else to do. Like, I could only turn to him. There was no other way.
Are you talking about internal, like, sins, overcoming sins, or, yeah. like, I'm having relational difficulties that I just can't fix myself?
Kind of both. Like, internal sin, and which would play out in relationships.
Yeah.
Just, you know, trying to navigate those. But
yeah.
So a lot of that.
I guess I'm asking because one of those can be kind of kept to yourself. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, it's like, my family's really seeing me work through this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my family would see me work through all of it.
Okay.
They kind of just know how to read me. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who's really good at hiding my emotions, how I feel in a situation. Like, you can kind of see it on my face.
Yeah.
So if I was down, I wouldn't smile a lot. Because normally if I'm like, everything's fine, I'm smiling a lot. But if I'm mentally going through it and there's a lot in my mind, you can see it reflected in my, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Your countenance, maybe.
Yeah, like how I'm acting. And so they would notice, but then I wouldn't want to burden them, so I wouldn't talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. I'd kind of be like, oh, I'm fine. This is, I'm going to deal with this. And I couldn't. So God had to take me to a point where I was like, oh, no, I literally can't do anything. Like, I'm exhausted. He humbled me. And so then I had to go to him. I had to go to my parents. So, like, I don't know what to do. Like,
yeah.
I'm going through this. I need your help.
Yeah.
So a lot of that, I think, during that time. There's a lot of that. Can you ask the question one more time? Because I had another thought.
I was just thinking about things that you learned from maybe challenges that you faced or obstacles you had to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of challenges in friendships.
I just was really moved by when we talked in the summer that you said, my parents didn't place their identity in my difficulties or the challenges that I had, and that they let you make mistakes.
Yeah. They gave me independence in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. So they didn't coddle me, where they made every problem that I faced their issue, where I was like, oh, I have to figure this out for my child. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, it's hard, and but we have to let her figure this out. And they've done that with all of us. We're like, so, you know, when you go to a school, when you're in social situations, when you do new things and you're on your own, you face challenges and difficulties. It's just part of life. And they were good about pushing us towards those realities, like going out and doing things on our own. And then we're faced with obstacles trying to figure that out. And of course, like, if we needed help or guidance, like, always open and ready to answer anything or help with anything. But they would let us take the reins, kind of figure, like, what am I going to do in this situation? Because it's good for us. Like, mm-hmm. we needed to figure out, I'm faced with this obstacle. How do I overcome it? Yeah. And if I can't overcome it, what do I do? I need to go to this person. I need to do this. And so that was really helpful for me because, again, my flesh was like, oh, you can do everything on your own. You're strong enough. You can handle this. You don't need anybody else. Mm. No, don't go burden people. Don't go talk to them about that. They don't need to deal with your problems.
Yeah.
And so that was what I was going through. And they, again, it's hard. It's not something where they were like, she'll figure it out. She'll be fine.
Yeah.
But they just let us work through it. And again, I had to come to that and often that happened often, where I had to come to a point where I had to reach out. And that was them letting me figure it out, like letting me go through it. So then I in turn was like, oh, actually, I see that my parents are here, that God has put them in my life for a reason, that I need them in this moment. I need them to help me with this. I need to reach out to them and ask for guidance and wisdom. But I couldn't get there if they were holding my hand every step of the way. They kind of had to push me out, let me go, let me do it.
I just remember you using language about discernment, and you said, my parents let me discern wrongly about some things.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure they were praying for you. Like you said, it wasn't just like wiping their hands of you or anything like that.
Oh, no, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would, there would be, of course, situations and things where I would go into them and I would think, I'm in the right here. I'm doing this right. And I was completely wrong. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see it because.
Sounds risky.
I was in my sin. I was in, you know. So they would let me go into it and I would mess up and I would discern wrongly and I would act wrongly. Like I would, maybe I was mean to people or I was cruel or I shouldn't said something or shouldn't have said something that I did say. So yeah, I messed up plenty, but letting me mess up taught me a lot. And mm-hmm. so when I messed up, they would still come and be like, oh, well, what should have you done in that situation? Mm-hmm. How should you respond to this now that you've messed up? But again, it's kind of like with a toddler or like a little kid when you're trying to teach them how to do something. Yeah. But if you're just like, no, do this, like sometimes you just have to give them something and let them do it so they can kind of connect the dots in their brain and figure it out.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting there over their shoulder like a helicopter parent every step of the way, it makes it harder for them to kind of click. And where they, when they get older, they need you for everything. Where they don't do anything by themselves. So similar to that.
So they did not wrap you in bubble wrap and push you out the door.
No, no, no. No.
With only like slits for your eyes. Like.
No, I mean, I think up to that point, though, they gave me what I needed to face
these things. Yeah, that's
so
important.
It wasn't we haven't prepared you at all. We've been hands off. And now you're in the real world. You're doing your own thing. You're facing these challenges by yourself and you have no tools.
Yeah.
They still gave me the tools that I needed. They still taught me what I needed to know. Now, and then I need to take those tools. And if I use them wrongly, that was on me.
Yeah.
But they still gave me what I needed to face those things.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a hands-off thing.
Yeah. And you said that has taught you a lot about God through the way that they interacted with you in this way.
Yeah. Like, I think... like, obviously, again, where the Lord let me get to a point in my sin where he's letting, like, well, not, maybe letting is not the right word, but because then it is on me. But I don't know. I think the Lord will put trials and things in our lives to teach us things. So when I look back at the trials that I faced in life, I'm kind of able to see it with, no, God taught me something through all of those things. And when I first came out of the trials, I couldn't see that. But now that I look back, I'm like, oh, this situation with this person or this situation where I was going through this sin taught me this and God strengthened me through that. But I still had to go through that hardship. I still had to go through the struggle with sin, with my flesh, the battle. I still had to face that. And so I think, you know, it's kind of similarly, my parents let me face that.
Yeah.
And I was able, you know, afterwards to see and they're like, no, see how this works with this. And sometimes my parents phrase it. How do they phrase it? Like, you have to touch the stove to know it's hot.
Right.
Like, you can be told a million times, the stove is hot, but you don't know. Like, there are some people where they don't know until they touch it.
You don't
like, oh, wait,
know
it's hot.
It is.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to do that with your kids. Let them see that themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of just telling them, warning them, let them do it.
Can you talk about how you mentioned, like, maybe the size or the scale of your friendships kind of shifted to maybe less girls. Was that a good thing for you? Was that a hard, something you like, God, I wish I had more friends? Or,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, well, it's complicated.
Cause you probably see it different now, right?
Yeah.
Than when you were going through it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of trying to go back to my mindset during that time. Because now I don't see it like I used to. But I think in the time, like in that time, I definitely was like, why don't I have more friends? Or why don't, maybe it wasn't friends because I knew plenty of people.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a deep friendship.
And I guess that's what I was searching for, where every time I'd meet someone new, it's like, I want to have this deep connection, like this super, I don't know.
So it could have been one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It could have just been one person. I just wanted to have something so deep with someone, like mm-hmm. a close-knit relationship. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that. It was like acquaintances or like people yes. I didn't know super well. So I was kind of just like chasing this, I want yeah. this really close friendship. So I would make all these friendships in high school and middle school that way, where I was like, oh, we need to be really close to do this. And he texts you all the time. If you don't text, just nonsense.
Yeah.
And they would blow up in my face. And that was a pattern that happened so many times. Every year it would happen over and over. And I was not learning. I was not learning that I am idolizing friendships and people. So, yeah, kind of when I stopped idolizing it, when I got to the point where I was like, yeah, why am I chasing this? Why is this something that I'm chasing so much? Like when I started valuing my relationship with the Lord more and putting that idol away and pursuing him, mm-hmm. he gave me what I wanted. Like the whole time, like I wanted a close friendship and it kept blowing up. And then once I started putting him first, it was like, then he gave me these really sweet girls in my life, that very godly women that influenced me in a lot of ways. And now I'm not as close with them. Like we don't talk as much as we used to because seasons change and things happen, but I still don't look at it with bitterness or anything of the sort. But me previously, when I saw, like when that would happen in a relationship, I would be bitter towards these people and angry towards them. Yeah. Like, why did you do this? Why did you leave me? Or why did you, when in reality it was, that's not what it was. And things happen in life. And it's, yeah. So, I don't know. I think once my perspective changed on what the point of friendship is, that helped me have better relationships with people in general, because it's not this, like the end goal of friendship is not the other person. You're not friends with someone to just constantly chase each other. Like right. you're supposed to be working towards the Lord always with everyone. And it's like, if you're traveling on a path and you have a companion walking with you, sometimes that companion might fall behind or they're off to the side. They're not next to you. Mm-hmm. But your end goal, you're not turning towards them and walking and towards them. You're not still
to be
walking
face to face.
Right.
That'd be funny. You're walking right. down a path, sidestep, sidestep. Right.
Exactly. Your end goal
Look
is
at
still.
Me.
Right. Right. Exactly. Your end goal is still what's at the end of the path.
Right.
So when I started thinking that way, where I was like, oh, what is the point of our relationship? That helped me a lot. Like, because I was expecting things out of friendships that were unrealistic. Like mm-hmm. that it wasn't fair to the person that I was friends with to expect so much of them.
Yeah.
To put these, what's the word I'm thinking of? This weight on the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
Those are kind of the things that I've been thinking about. I'm like, yeah. when I look at the Bible and like primary relationships are obviously, at least for me, husband or, you know, God, husband, my kids, and then church. I'm like, wait,
yeah.
friendships, where is that? And then right. does the Bible even really emphasize yeah. that or really talk about it?
Yeah.
Like more like their church is more family than mm-hmm. friends. I'm like, okay, so then what does that mean? That those are the things that.
Right.
Kind of like you're saying, what are these relationships meant to be like in my life, instead of making up something or desiring something in the wrong way or idolizing something, and instead of just asking God, what do you say these things are,
right,
so that I can pursue that?
Yeah.
Because oh, yeah. you'll probably have learned this too, like sometimes even the people that become the most precious in your life for a season or whatever aren't even the people you'd outright pursue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, for right. or whatever. So, I mean,
oh, yeah.
that just shows that maybe I don't really know what I'm talking about here.
I think it's just a tricky
yeah.
subject. It's something
it
that
is.
A lot of people are still figuring out. And most people, it's a hard subject to talk about.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Bible has, versus like, there's a friend that sticks closer to a brother. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think there's... It's like, oh, we shouldn't value friendships with people. Like, we're made to be in community. And so friendships yes. are important. I guess it's just, like you're saying, putting them at the right level mm-hmm. in life. So if they're above your husband or your kids or
yeah.
God, then it's you're not putting them on the level they should be.
Mm-hmm.
But also when you're looking at your friend, is it when you're together, like, I mean, we had this conversation one time in community group, but friendships, others, if you're together with your friends, are you, is God something you talk about at all? Or is it just gossip or anything else, right, in the world? Or are your conversations centered around the Lord? And it doesn't mean you only have to talk about the Lord, but if that's never something you talk about, then there's a problem there.
Yeah.
What is your purpose of your friendship? Are you guys there to serve the Lord together? Or are you there to just talk about others and,
yep,
you know, just chat?
Or to get away from something else.
Yeah, right, know? Right. Kind of as like a mind break or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's also helpful to like work towards things together. When you make the friendship more like, what are we doing together? Like, mm-hmm, let's work towards things. Let's do things together. Let's host people. Let's see how we can love those around us. I mean, when I've done that with people, it's always been better than just let's sit and talk about everything, mm-hmm, wrong in our life.
Yeah. Yes. Totally. Okay. So wrapping this up. Whew, we're doing it. Oh, man. This is a big question. Name three people who've impacted you in your life and why.
Oh, goodness. Only three? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's an expected answer, but my mom, because of her dedication to us and how she's given up her entire life and sacrificed every part of her life for our good and for, so that we can be people who know the Lord and are faithful Christian. Like, she has literally given up her whole life. She got married, again, I think 20 years old, and mm-hmm, her whole life has been spent loving us and giving everything to us. So I see that in her more and more each year, and especially when I'm away, I see how much she's loved us and everything that she's done to give us the life that we've lived, even when we didn't have much. Like, she's always given us so much. So definitely my mom. I mean, even just the way that she's provided meals and provided a warm home impacts how I see life, who I want to be. That's always been influenced by who my mom is, and it always will be. So definitely my mom. And then my dad, because, I don't know, he's shaped so much of who I am, kind of how he sees the world and how he connects the Lord to everything in life, and how it literally, it's not disconnected in any way. It's his, everything he does is shaped through scripture. Like, I see that in him, and he has, I don't know, he's just done so much. He's sacrificed so much again. He's given everything to us, and he's always been there. He's always been loving us. He's spent his time discipling us and teaching us. There's just everything about him. Both my parents, I would be utterly lost without them, and I would not be who I am today without them. Yeah, I value their input in everything in my life. So, yeah.
What's something about your mom that you're like, and something about your dad that you are like, is that right English? What are traits you have? Or a trait from both of them, I guess.
Oh, I think I'm passionate like my dad. I'm definitely like outgoing like he is. I can see this like passion in him for life and different things. Not that my mom doesn't have it. It's just a different kind in my dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more right on his face when you meet him in the first conversation you have with him, you see it. And I think I have some of that where I'm like so excited for life. Like, I just want to do so much in life. And there's just a passion for the Lord in life. And I think I have some of that from him, just in how it plays out in me. From my mom.
Well, I will say your dad is the only person that I've heard ever say, I couldn't sleep last night because I was so excited. I've heard him say it several times. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe three times I've heard him say it. It's funny.
That is hilarious.
I couldn't sleep. So excited.
I totally get it. Yeah, because you're like, I feel like that was kind of me before Heave or something. Yeah. I was so excited for Heave. I was like, this is going to be so fun. Especially the second day. I was like, oh, my gosh. It's so fun.
Yeah.
So I'll have moments like that. I totally get it. That's so funny. He said that. My mom, I'm trying to think. I think my brothers and my dad will say that me and my mom are similar in a lot of ways, just in terms of like, I guess how we maybe how we react to things, like our emotional responses to, like, emotional mm-hmm. and mental. Like, I think like, we respond similarly to things where we also both have, I guess, similarities in terms of, like, struggles, things we go through that are similar.
Mm. That's so interesting. We both,
yeah. So, I, like, when I struggle through things, it's like I talk to my mom and she understands because she gets it. Maybe it's just because we both have similar, I don't know, we really love deep connection and deeper things.
Yeah.
And we're both that way. We yeah. very interested in that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers it.
But. Yes, it does. Okay, you have one more person one to more share
person.
About.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, I had some impactful teachers.
Okay, share about that.
Because, you know, I'd like to say my brothers, but then it's all my brothers. So I'm thinking of one person. Yeah, I mean, I had some teachers growing up that were, I don't know, the way that they taught was, I don't know, it shaped me a lot, pushing me to be the best that I can be in class to, because I was often anxious in class. Which
like directly or indirectly pushed you?
Oh, directly. They'd be like, okay. Oh, you need to speak out. Like, you need to talk. Like, you need to say things. Okay. Like, you need to speak up in class. You need it. Like, so they'd be direct about it. But that was good for me because I was very anxious in class where I struggled a lot with how other people perceived me and what they thought of me. Mm-hmm. So it'd make me clam up where I had a bunch of opinions about everything. I was just so nervous to share them. I would like shut down. Mm-hmm. So having teachers that would push me to talk and not be nervous of those things and, you know, use my brain actively and think, that was really good for me. If I have to say one specific teacher, it's probably, his name was Kevin Smith. We called him Mr. Smith. And his classes were just, I mean, I have a few teachers like that. He's definitely one of them. I'll take them forever. Like, I always remember them because they were so good. Just how the conversation, again, always tied into scripture and the Lord throughout everything. That was really helpful for me when I was going through all the crazy things.
Yeah. Praise God. Okay. Anything you would tell your younger self? Last question.
So many things. Ooh. Emphasizing probably actively reading my Bible, where it's not a task that I need to check off in my day, but you know, something I can understand fully, like take this passage, actually read it. Don't just daydream while you're reading. Like, you need to think about what is being said, because I feel like the last few, maybe 5 years, or I don't know, as when I actively read the Bible, so much is said through that. Like, I see so much, and I don't know, there's just, I feel like I've been closer to the Lord the past few years by actively reading the Bible, not making it a task, but making it something. It's like, oh no, this is what you need for life. Like, you need to be in the Word, and being in the Word is actively reading, comprehending what's being said. And if you have questions, ask, so you can see the answer to this. So probably something along that line.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Great. Okay. As we close, this is a section where you get to think of another person, or you've already thought about this person, right?
Hopefully. Yeah.
Okay. You get to pick a woman in our church family who you have witnessed them having Christ-like virtue or Christ-like character, or you've personally experienced it from them. And then would you honor that woman and pray for her as we close this episode?
Okay. So, I have a verse. When I was meditating on this and thinking about who I should, I don't know, talk about. I mean, you say like the character of the Lord, like what's something you see in the character of Jesus that is imitated in, you know, someone in the church. And I kept thinking about like a servant and a servant's heart. And one verse that I guess I wanted to note on was, Mark 10:43-45. And it says, "But it shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And so, kind of thinking about that verse, so the woman I wanted to talk about was Mary Ann Rimmer, and I just I see this humble service in her that I think is a rare thing. It stood out to me. Like, I'm in their community group, and I've been in their community group for a little over a year now. Mm. And throughout that time, I've kind of seen this in her, where it's not something that's loud. It's not something you may even notice if you're not paying attention to her actions. But she goes around, and like even after discussion, she cleans all the dishes, and we meet at someone else's house in the community group. So she loads the dishwasher for him, and she packs everyone's dishes up so they can just pick it up and go. And she goes around and picks up all the trash, and she does it without a word, never makes it about herself. It's just a way that she serves our group. And she's also very welcoming and homey. Like, she's just, whenever anyone is alone or there's a new person in the group, she's one of the first people I see to go up and talk to them. And she's also good at remembering and being intentional about, oh, you know, what is going on in this person's life, and then bringing it back up. So thinking, oh, you told me about this, you know, this other week. How are you doing in that? What is going on? She's very good at that. And I've seen it. And so it's very impactful for me, because I want to be someone who has that humble service, where I don't make it about myself, but I just do what needs to be done, and I serve the body and the people around me lovingly in a humble and quiet way. And so seeing that reflected in her has been something I've wanted to imitate. And she also is very joyful. She has a beautiful smile and the sweetest laugh. Like, her laugh is so contagious. Whenever I'm around her, it's just, we will sometimes just, me and her burst out laughing. No. And just laugh together, because I also laugh a lot. But she'll look at me sometimes because she thinks something's funny, and we both just start giggling because she has the best laugh. So I love her joyful demeanor and her laugh. She's very sweet. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to talk about.
Go ahead and pray for her.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for Mary Ann. Thank you for the blessing that she is on our community, not only our community group specifically, but our whole church. Thank you for her heart and her care for those around her. Thank you for just bringing her into my life and just having her as an example for who I want to be when I'm older as well. I pray that you will bless her in all that she does. I pray that you'll be with her as she loves her family, as she serves you, as she goes about her life. I just pray that you will build her up and strengthen her and give her wisdom. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Whole Home Podcast, a podcast that displays the unity of sisters in a local church and the way God so wonderfully gives us to each other in our uniqueness and in our sameness for His glory. The stories we share weave together as one grand testimony to the work of Christ and His faithful presence in the garden of our lives. Remember, the Master Gardener is always at work, so let's yield to Him and grow where we're planted.